Welcome to the Musings on Sports podcast for May 31st, 2022. I'm Kelly Elbin along with my co-host Bob Bupka, and I hope everyone took a moment to reflect on what Memorial Day is all about. Bob, I hope you had a relaxed day. How are you?
I agree with you, Kelly. I hope everybody just took a moment out to ponder the real importance of what we celebrated this week, because without the sacrifices that were made by so many, we would not be enjoying what we're enjoying today. And, you know, if you say thank you every day, it's not enough, but it was a very special day and very emotional for anybody that ever served in the armed forces.
No question about it. And as I wrote in my Monday musings on Facebook, it's from the large gatherings and all the way to the small gatherings at cemetery plots and family plots throughout this country, from Arlington National all the way to those remote corners where people, they remember. It's a great country we live in. And so much of it is because of those who gave so much to us. We have a terrific guest today in Mike Thomas. Mike's the father and coach of Justin Thomas, who recently won his second PGA championship at Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa. You and I have already had the opportunity to talk with Mike, and I think our listeners are really going to enjoy his comments and his insights in balancing that coach and father part of that relationship.
Kelly, very rarely do the listeners get a chance to basically go behind the scenes. They're seeing Justin Thomas raise that Wanamaker trophy with his victory after the playoff. But Musings on Sports, we're going to take you behind the scenes. His father, you know, just a wonderful PGA professional. His grandfather was a PGA professional. And to have, as Mike puts it, a son win the PGA championship, not only once, but now two times, is pretty special. I think everybody's going to enjoy what Mike Thomas has to say.
Yeah, I think so too. Extraordinary PGA of America lineage in that family, and golf has been incredibly good to that family. You know, after we talked with Mike yesterday, Bob, it got me thinking about coaches in general. And there's a lot of NCAA championships right now being played here in the spring. You've got lacrosse, you've got softball, you've got baseball coming up. And there are so many great coaches who people may not immediately recognize, like a Nick Saban in football or a Mike Krzyzewski in basketball. But man, they are so good at what they do. And a number of them, just in these recently played lacrosse games, have had remarkable runs. I really didn't plan to watch the women's NCAA lacrosse championship on Sunday, but I happened on it and I was absolutely mesmerized. North Carolina ended up holding off Boston College 12-11. For those women and the battles that took place on that field and the memories, good and bad, that they'll have for a lifetime. Such passion for the game. Carolina actually came from 8 goals back to win and complete a perfect season. Hey, Bob, Jenny Levy is the Tar Heels head coach. She just completed her 27th season, 3rd national title. She ranks 3rd in Division I with 400 victories versus 118 losses. And then yesterday, and this was kind of close to my heart, the Maryland Terrapins men team also finished off a perfect season, and they really did hold off Cornell to win the national championship 9-7. The Terps coach, John Tillman, great example again of a coach that you may not know about. He's 160-40 over 12 seasons in College Park, and the Terps over the last two seasons under Tillman's guide, they're 33-1, the only loss being in the national championship game last year. Those are the kinds of coaches that really make a difference at their schools, obviously, but in the lives of so many young people. And Bob, I know coaches have been an important part of your life all the way back to your days when you were growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the one thing about big-time college coaches, and I certainly give them all the credit in the world, but I think to a T, everyone would say, hey, I only coach as good as I recruit. And winning breeds winning. Anybody that's having good seasons and winning when they go out to recruit other players, they have a big edge over, you know, a program that, that has not been winning. And when you mentioned that, as far as myself, well, I go back and I'm really going to be dating myself. The first year that Little League Baseball came into being, I was able to try out. I was 12 years old at the time, and it was for 10 to 12-year-olds. And I still, to this day, I remember my coach. I think it actually was the very first coach that I had when I was with other players. And we came together, and, you know, coaching my high school basketball coach ended up being one of my best friends, my college coach in basketball, and I just spoke to the other day. So there's something special about the word coach. And I think one of the biggest compliments anybody in athletics can get is when they're referred to as coach. I do that to anyone that's ever coached me. I'm proud to call them coach. And now I'm being coached on how to do some other stuff. And so, Kelly, I'm going to award you that title. You're now officially my Musings on Sports coach.
Well, I'm honored. I don't really, this is unexpected. I'm humbled, and I will gracefully accept this moniker. This is fantastic, Bob. I didn't anticipate this. But,
well, put me in, coach, because I don't smoke.
You do other things, but that you don't do, I know. Thank you very much for that honor. Speaking of honors, speaking of talent, man, I noticed in both the men's and women's golf championships, Bob, we've got a couple more budding superstars, and they're super young. Kid named Gordon Sargent, a freshman at Vanderbilt. Young lady named Rose Zhang, a freshman at Stanford. Both won the individual titles in their respective NCAA golf championships. Sargent's the first freshman since 07 to win the national championship. He did it with a birdie on the first playoff hole. Zhang didn't have that much drama. She went wire to wire. She won by three shots. Oh, and speaking of being able to accumulate talent, the last freshman to win the women's individual title, that would be Zhang's teammate, Rachel Heck, who did it last year. And I know you'll be watching. By the way, Zhang will be teeing it up this week in the U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles in North Carolina.
Yeah, great golf course, a great community. I remember going there after Annika Sorenstam won the year before at the Broadmoor in Colorado, won her first Women's Open. Following year, we went to Pine Needles. Her parents were there. Another exciting victory by Annika Sorenstam, who many argue certainly one of the best females ever to play the game. And what makes it really sweet, Annika playing this year at Pine Needles. Going to be interesting to see how she performs.
Oh, I wouldn't put it past her to play well. I don't know that she'd win, but I would almost expect her to play well. And you know she will be prepared. She obviously hasn't played in competitive environments in quite some time, but she is Annika Sorenstam, and I think she'll play well. So you have the seasoned veteran in Annika and the younger players, and there's so many of them. Another example is the University of Tennessee baseball team. They have absolutely overpowered the competition this year. They've been the number one ranked team in college baseball all season. They were just selected as the number one overall seed in the NCAA baseball tournament, which starts Friday in 16 regionals. Bob, this team can hit. They can field. They can do it all. Tremendous talent. However, only one on that team has the best nickname by far, and that belongs to a kid. You talk about a hard-throwing right-hander, Ben Joyce. And, of course, being with the Tennessee Volunteers, he's been dubbed the Volunteer Fireman. He threw a 105.5-mile-an-hour pitch in a game on April 30th. That's the fastest in college baseball history. You know, I can remember when a pitcher throwing 90 miles an hour was a big deal. But, Bob, this is not just for baseball. the development of athletes, all kinds of sports. And I know you can particularly focus on golf, bigger, stronger, faster, right?
I had an opportunity once to go into a batting cage, and they asked me, what did I want the speed of the pitch to come in at? So I said, let me have 85. And I stood in there, and then I said, well, throw it. The guy said, we already did. I mean, it's amazing what 85. I can't even imagine 90, 95, 100, and the volunteer fireman, 105. But you're so much on the money, Kelly, that the athletes coming onto the golf scene, bigger, stronger, dedicated to working out. I mean, 25 years ago, none of the golfers knew what the inside of a gym looked like. Now, you want to meet any golfer, where do you go? You go to the gym. You're sure to see them there. Go to any hotel where the tour players are staying. Go down to the gymnasium. You'll see them all there early in the morning. And that's what not only golf, but every sport is coming to. Bigger, better, stronger, and it makes for much more enjoyment for the fans.
Well, and what we saw over the weekend, two good friends, two Texans, Sam Burns, Scottie Scheffler, two big, strong kids. And just so happened that Burns rolled in that, I think, 38-foot putt from off the green in the playoff hole. But Scheffler already has a major championship to his credit with the Masters this year. Those guys are going to win a lot of golf tournaments, I think, as are a lot of guys who have to be that way, Bob, right? I mean, you cannot sit back and be idle. You have to continue to improve, be stronger, use all the technology that's available. And again, I think that applies kind of across the board for all levels of sport.
Well, I don't think this hard work is going unrewarded. Just taking a look at the money list, Burns now has made $6 million this year. Scottie Scheffler, over $11 million just this year alone. Kelly? I think after we finish this broadcast, I think you might want to go to the gym.
Go to the gym, hit a few balls, and this has been quite the session. You've anointed me a coach. Now I gotta take that coach's hat off for a little bit and go work out and get myself in shape. But Bob, as we talked about, you and I had a chance to talk to a real coach yesterday, and Mike Thomas, Justin's dad and coach. You guys are really going to enjoy this. You'll hear that interview right after these words from our good friends at Titleist.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Kelly Elbert here along with Bob Bupka. And Bob, I know you're a father. I'm a dad, but I'm pretty darn confident that neither one of us has ever experienced the kind of thrill that our special guest felt on the 18th green at Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa when his son, Justin Thomas, won his second Wanamaker Trophy as the 2022 PGA champion. He's been there for Justin in so many ways, and we're delighted to welcome him to Musings on Sports, PGA professional Mike Thomas. I have to imagine that life is pretty darn sweet right now.
Yeah, it's, we've been pushing for a win all year. We've played really well, been close, and we were due for one, and we certainly needed to win one, and for it to be a major, and then for it to be a PGA championship, just made it all that more special.
You know, Mike, I want to congratulate you on the job you did, have done, I should say. But it's not about Justin's ability to play this wonderful sport of golf. It's the job that you did in raising a young man to be the son an ambassador that he is for the sport of golf. I think people in golf are so blessed when we have somebody the caliber of a Justin Thomas winning the PGA Championship. A lot of youngsters certainly can look up to him. So, yes, you did a great job teaching him how to play golf, but I think you did an even better job teaching them how to be a good person.
Well, thank you. That, you know, was always an emphasis for Jenny, his mother, and I. I mean, we always stressed that, and we still stress that today, that, you know, people are going to remember you for the type of person you are more than they're going to remember the wins. And, you know, when he's younger, it just, I don't think that those messages really hit home, but I think he understands that now. He's been out there long enough to see that, you know, how some people are treated and how some of the players conduct themselves. And I definitely think it hits home a little bit more now than what it did when we were preaching that message to him.
Hey, Meg, let me ask you this. How were the emotions different for you as a dad and a coach in seeing your son win the PGA Championship for the first time in 2017 versus this time, especially with your father, Paul, also a PGA professional, having passed away last year?
Yeah, I mean, 2017, you know, we had won a couple times. You know, obviously it was kind of young, early in his career. So, you know, thinking about winning a major, obviously we were, that was part of our goals. But, you know, when it finally happened, it was just unbelievable that it happened. And my dad was still alive at the time. And, you know, I've been involved with the PGA on the Kentucky board and as a national director. So for it to be a PGA championship was quite overwhelming. This time, you know, it was more that we were knocking on the door so many times, and we could have had a win or two or even three leading up to the PGA championship in Southern Hills. And then obviously for the position we were in Sunday, it did not look like, you know, we were going to win. We were hoping, you know, for a top five or something. I mean, my wife and I were, we don't say those things to him, but, you know, he was always trying to win. But and then it was kind of a shock this year, because it wasn't until like 11 or 12 where we thought, you know, if we get a little help here, we might have a chance. And so, you know, one of them, we were knocking on the door in 2017, and this one, it didn't look like it was going to happen. So it was probably quite a bit more of a surprise this one was.
PGA professional Mike Thomas, the father and coach of Justin Thomas, the 2022 PGA Championship winner, is with us on Musings on Sports. Mike, first of all, I'm sorry for the loss of your dad, Paul. I wonder if you could just take a minute and talk about your dad and how he helped inspire you to become a PGA club professional. I know he was a very good player. He played in some major championships, but he was really a club professional, much like you became for many years.
Yeah, I think a lot of the inspiration that I had to get in the golf business, you know, came from my dad. I had been around the golf business, you know, for quite a while. So it was really kind of all I really knew, going to work when I was very young, for my dad and doing the things and watching the things that he did on a daily basis. And I just always had a love for the game. And when I got out of college, like a lot of people, I thought I could play, and quickly found out that I did not have the game to compete on the level that other guys were competing on. And I just immediately turned to the golf business. I wanted to be in golf somehow. And I was fortunate to work for some good people and you know, helped me grow my passion for the golf industry. And, you know, as I've said many times through interviews and so forth, you know, golf has been very, very good to our family. I mean, my dad allowed my dad to raise a family, allowed me to raise one. And now Justin, obviously, it's been good to him as well.
Yeah, it really has. I know you were the head professional at Harmony Landing in Kentucky for many years. I know the membership there was very open to having Justin out there playing and you working with him. Was there a point, was there a tournament, a moment when you began to realize that your son may have the skills to be that kind of special player to compete at an elite level? And also, as part of that, we talked about the sort of the life lessons that you and Jenny tried to instill in him. Did they sort of run parallel, instilling those life lessons and helping him develop as a good player sort of at the same time?
Well, a lot of the life lessons that, you know, parents do with their children, you know, that did not involve golf as much, although, you know, golf certainly helped build character, whether it was a poor showing or a heartbreaking finish or something like that, it certainly helps build character in that regard. But a lot of the life lessons that we tried to instill on him were outside of golf. As far as when I knew, you know, he had an opportunity to maybe play at this level, I never really looked at it that way. I mean, I had no shortage of members and friends and people around me who was forecasting what was going to happen. And, you know, I was like, I just always took the approach that, you know, he's doing something he loves, he's safe, he's healthy, he's happy. And that's kind of what I focus on. Mm-hmm. Not looking out in the future of what could possibly happen. I just never allowed myself to do that. But that being said, he did continually surprise me as somebody that, you know, taught golf as part of my living. He just continually did things at every age level, in every level of competition, he would do things that would surprise me and, you know, pretty uncomfortable moments, how he would rise up. And those are the kind of things that I look back on and things that you can't really teach, that he just had the guts and the heart and the stomach to want to be in that fight. And that's the thing that always stood out to me as a possibility of, you know, he was going to be good at something because he liked that. He liked to be in the heat of the moment.
We're so proud to have Mike Thomas, father and coach, the PGA champion Justin Thomas, with us on Musing on Sports. Mike, are you with Justin each week he's out on tour? And how does a typical week go with him?
I mean, that's really one of the reasons I had to leave my club at Harmony Landing Country Club. I was coming out 5 or 6 weeks a year. And one year, I think it was in Phoenix, I just kind of sat down with him and said, hey, you know, am I out here enough? Am I out here too much? I mean, what would you like from me? We really haven't talked about this. And he said, I'd like you to be out here more often than you are. And of course, that meant that I couldn't do both. And so I had to go back to my club after that event and tell him that I was going to work that whole year. But at the end of the year, I was going to be leaving. And I think that they knew that that was ultimately going to, that day was going to come. You know, I had to leave my job because of that. But a typical week, I'm out there every week that he plays. A typical week is we'll get in Monday morning. He might do some light work on Monday, depending on whether he played the golf course. If it's a 2 or 3 week stretch he's on Monday, he might not play at all. He may just do a good workout and just rest up. Then we typically do 9 holes Tuesday. Tuesday's probably our big work day. We'll do 9 holes, practice a lot. Based on what he's doing, if it's putting that needs a lot of work or short game or full swing, you know, we touch them all on Tuesday, but our emphasis is more on what is lacking at that given time. So if it's putting, you know, we may spend hours putting, doing a lot of performance drills and things like that. Wednesday's a 9-hole pro-am typically, and then hopefully we don't have too much work to do Wednesday afternoon because we've got to rest. And if we're working Wednesday afternoon, then our game's not in very good shape to begin with. So we'll just kind of clean up with whatever needs cleaned up, and he'll typically get home early on a Wednesday and just rest up. And then the tournament days is just pretty much a warm-up, go play, and then address any inadequacies that maybe we had that day on the golf course. We may address those in like an hour session after the round. If he played well, or if he's been like this week, he was on a long stretch there, 3 in a row, and all the stuff that comes with winning the PGA Championship. Obviously, he was pretty worn out. So usually we wouldn't do anything after the round. But every week it follows kind of a similar similar story. It's just a function of where we're at any given time.
Mike, let me ask you, how do you walk that fine line between being a father and the coach of a tour professional this long into his career?
Well, I always tell people that, you know, I'm a friend first, a coach second, and a father third. And obviously at 29 years old, he needs less parenting than coaching. So I really don't look at myself as his father near as much as his friend and his coach. So, and I've kind of always taken that approach. So it's been easy for us out there. You know, I like to think of us as two friends, and one of them happens to be a golf coach. And so it's really easy for us. We're fortunate that way that he doesn't look at me as his dad telling him something to work on. He looks at it as his coach telling him something to work on. And then we spend a lot of time together, you know, goofing off and so forth, like we always have, just like two friends would. So, you know, I think that's a big key to our relationship is that I try to be a father third after being a friend and a coach.
Well, that's fantastic. Mike Thomas joining us on Musings on Sports. And Mike, you and I and Bob were chatting offline before we came on the air, and Bob told a funny story about Tiger Woods, who I know he knows well, as do you and Justin. And a lot's been made about that special relationship that your son has with Tiger and the back and forth jousting and giving each other a hard time and so forth. How did that relationship start? What do you think that friendship means to both of them? And for what does it mean to you to see Justin have, you know, such a close bond with clearly one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player of all time?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of surreal, that relationship is, just because, like a lot of kids Justin's age back in the day, you know, they grew up admiring Tiger Woods. And you know, he had a lot of the mannerisms. I think it instilled part of his work ethic and everything in Justin. And then for years later to end up having a relationship with him and to be able to share some of the wisdom that he has passed on to both Justin and I, that part is pretty surreal that, you know, we went from idolizing him and admiring all of his achievements to, you know, now becoming his friend. That is the pretty surreal part of that whole relationship.
How did that actually start? How did the two of them become better friends, good friends?
You know, I'm not really sure exactly the answer to that, but I think maybe 4 years ago or something, when Tiger was rehabbing after one of his surgeries and he was out for quite a while, I think Justin, you know, he knew him a little bit, and he, you know, living in a similar area, he just reached out to him a couple times, went over there and kept him company and so forth when he couldn't really do anything. And you know, I think that meant a lot to Tiger, you know. And at the same time, you know, Tiger's probably one of the best trash talkers of all time. And Justin's not afraid to throw some barbs out there either. And I think that hit a lot off with him too, that, you know, even in his, when he was rehabbing and going through all those injuries and everything, that Justin wasn't afraid to sling a few arrows his way. And I think Tiger got a kick out of that, as well as, you know, Tiger will often say, you know, he's the brother that I never had. So I think that probably had a little bit to do with it as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Hey, you said something earlier about your son in terms of guts and heart and stomach, and you're a terrific teacher of the fundamentals of the game. How do you go about helping him handle what is clearly extraordinary pressure that comes with competing at the highest levels of golf? But is it also with that guts and the heart and the stomach? Is some of that just part of his DNA?
Yeah, I think some of it, you know, some of the stuff that is in his heart and in his stomach is, I don't know if you can really teach that. He developed that, you know, everybody, hopefully a lot of people develop a passion for something along the way. It just happened to be golf with him. you know, that's not something that we really worked on, like drilling him with mental stuff and things. He just was always really strong that way. You know, a lot of what we did in the past, we would have tons of contests and tons of different things, even at a very young age, and that evolved into playing for quarters and then dollars and so forth. So he was in a competitive environment quite often when he was around me, because I was still playing a lot of section events and stuff. So, you know, I enjoyed the competition, and he was certainly very competitive at a very young age. So we would have a lot of contests. I think that fed a lot of his competitive desires, if you will.
Well, Mike, it certainly has been a treat having you on Musing on Sports. Twice now, your son has raised that beautiful Wanamaker Trophy. In a few weeks, I know he will be focused on the U.S. Open Trophy. How will you and Justin prepare in leading up to the week of the U.S. Open at the Country Club outside of Boston?
Looking back at the Colonial, a golf course that really fit Justin well, I look back on that. I haven't talked to him about this yet, but I will pass this on to him this week. I feel like I did a poor job as a coach getting him ready to play. I think he was kind of enjoying his, his second major, and there's always a letdown after that. And I probably should have addressed that more, that, hey, we got another week to play here. This is a good week for you. You're swinging good at it. So I think I failed a little bit last week in our prep for Colonial. As far as leading into the U.S. Open, we're going to play the Canadian Open. We want to play events leading up to majors this year. That was one of our goals. It certainly worked out playing the Byron Nelson for the first time before the PGA Championship. So we're going to play the Canadian Open, and we'll prepare for the U.S. Open like we would prepare for any other week, is address our weaknesses, make sure we keep our strengths, make sure we keep that as strengths by working on those areas as well. And he's played that golf course, so he knows a little bit about, you know, a lot of the time that we spend hitting balls and so forth. We'll try to hit a lot of the clubs that he's going to be hitting and a lot of the shot shapes that he's going to be hitting going into Brookline.
Hey, Mike, before Bob closes out this interview, I'm interested. You're not the only one of a club professional who has an outstanding son or daughter who's a good player. There's a lot of them. Any recommendations in terms of what you would tell a PGA club professional who has a son or daughter who he or she thinks has the potential to be really good, in terms of how best to raise them, to help them enjoy the game, be competitive in the game, and grow with the game, and with the hopes of perhaps one day being a tour player?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the good things from being around the golf business all this time, I got to see it done poorly many times, and I'm able to kind of look at those experiences and say, okay, I've seen this done wrong so many times, and I'm just not going to follow that path. So the advice that I would have for young parents is you have to make sure that you keep the game fun for your kids. I mean, kids like to have fun. That's kind of one of the messages that I always give to parents is, you know, if your child is not having fun doing this, then it's not worth it. Kids like to have fun. So if I could have, you know, one bit of advice to pass on to parents of young children in particularly, even if they're really talented player, you know, just keep it fun and make sure that they get a coach that they can gel well with, that they have a good relationship with, and just let them enjoy the game of golf.
Well, Mike, it goes without saying, it's been a privilege and an honor for Kelly and myself to have the opportunity to find out a little bit more of the inside of Justin Thomas. Two majors under his belt, U.S. Open coming up. Say, Mike, thank you so much for joining us on Musings on Sports.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover. The smarter tour ball.
You know, Bob, that was terrific talking to Mike. He's such an interesting man. He's son of a PGA professional, mentored his son to become an elite player. I thought, though, towards the end of that interview, what he talked about, and I think it's so important about keeping the game, whatever the sport is, keeping it fun for kids, so important to the development of kids, no matter what sport they may be interested in taking up.
If any of our listeners take away anything from that interview with Mike Thomas, the point you just brought up, Kelly, I think is the important one. Keep it fun for your youngsters. There's plenty of time as they get older to get serious. And I can guarantee you, if you don't keep it fun, they're not going to want to participate. And then everybody's going to be disappointed. So, Mike, thanks for that tip. Absolutely spot on. Just keep it fun for those youngsters.
Well, and I anticipate for Justin, he's gonna be keeping on because we've got the U.S. Open coming up, which we mentioned at the Country Club outside of Boston. We have the Open Championship at the Old Course. I'm sure you would agree with me. I expect him to be formidable and a big time presence in both of those championships and major championships, you know, for years to come. Bob, I want to thank Mike Thomas. It was just terrific. Reminder to join us next week, where we will be welcoming in Jimmy Roberts from NBC Sports. Selfishly ask that you all check out my Facebook page, Kelly Elbin, for my Monday musings. I think you'll enjoy them. And please listen to Musings on Sports wherever you enjoy your podcast. For my good friend Bob Bupka, this is Coach Kelly Elbin. Thanks for joining us and listening to Musings on Sports.